Good evening. This is an Around Cincinnati baseball special. I'm Lee Hay. On tonight's two-hour show, Mark Caney and I invited a number of baseball fans into the studio to talk about the great Reds player and hitting coach Ted Kluszewski, including his wife Eleanor. Bernie Stowe and his wife Priscilla shared memories of his long career with the Reds. Mark and I also visited a baseball exhibition at the Price Hill Historical Society, the Big Red Machine exhibition at the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame, and sports investments in Montgomery. Plus, you'll hear a preview of Reds Fest, a phone interview with Ken Griffey Sr., and memories of Reds player Herm Wehmeyer. A celebration of baseball this evening on Around Cincinnati.
My name's Priscilla Stowe. I'm married to Bernie.
My name's Bernie Stowe with Cincinnati Reds. I'm still working part-time. When they're on the road, I get off.
He just putzes around down there. He has chores like cleaning the shoes and helping them with the dishes. They cater to them two meals a day, so they always have a lot of dishes.
Bernie, what's your title now? It's senior clubhouse manager?
Something like that.
Yeah, senior clubhouse manager.
Priscilla, when you were a teenager, they had player fan clubs.
Right.
What ones were you part of?
Art Fowler, Corky Valentine, Ted Kluszewski, Ed Bailey. I think those were the four that I was mostly affiliated with.
All of them are dead, too.
You were part of the Ted Kluszewski fan club?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? What were the activities that you did? What are your memories from that?
Mostly, we girls would go to the ball games. We'd have meetings in the winter because there was no ball games, and we'd write up little newsletters. One of our big activities, the biggest, I guess, that we did in the summer that included the players, we always had a picnic at Burnett Woods. And all of the fan clubs would participate, and all of the players and their families would be invited. As far as other activities, we'd get together with each other. Mind you, we were only high school girls, and we didn't have cars. We did everything. We had to go on the bus everywhere we went. None of us drove. Like I said, our big activity was the picnic and our meetings. It was a social thing for us, and then going to the games and talking about the players. Some of the girls would get in touch with the families during the winter. I didn't. We had a president. I wasn't an officer, so she'd sometimes threw Christmas cards or something like that, get in touch with the families. That's about all we did. It lasted, well, about 4 years, 15 to 19.
How did you first get interested in baseball?
My mother worked at a Crosley facility, and she got tickets, and my father took me and my brother. My father was interested, and in those days, when you listened to the radio, you sat in front of the radio. And I'd always see him during the game sitting in front of the radio, and sometimes I'd join him. And then when I was a sophomore in high school, I met a couple of girls from, I lived on Columbia Parkway, and they lived down in Saddamsville. And they were into baseball, and she knew somebody that had started the Frank Smith fan club. So, my ears perked up because I was so interested in baseball. So that's how I got affiliated with a bunch of people that were of the same interest that I did. And we had girls from all over the city in northern Kentucky. It's amazing how we all got together. It was just word of mouth, I think, and meeting at the ballpark, mostly on Ladies' Day, because it was only 25 cents to go to the ball game. On Ladies' Day, if you sat in the far left field or far right field. And then as we got older and had a little bit of money, we'd buy tickets in the grandstand and sit down in left field by the bullpen. And we always knew if we went to the game, there'd always be somebody down there, another couple girls that came, and we'd have a little social hour there.
What are your memories of Ted Kluszewski?
He was a big guy, but he was like a gentle giant. I mean, he was soft-spoken. You would think you would be afraid of him because he was a pretty good-sized guy. But no, he was a very soft-spoken guy. He didn't have any children. other than coming to our picnic, I don't have a whole lot of memories from way back then.
How did you and Bernie meet?
He was a bat boy, so I always say we met at Crosley Field, but we really didn't. He had another friend that worked in the umpire's room, so he didn't have anything to do when the game started. So he came down and sat with us down in left field. So we always, because we didn't drive, we took buses. We went down to downtown, and on Sunday, they were Sunday afternoon games, and we'd go to, it's called Minute Chef. It was in the Gibson Hotel. We always stopped and got a sandwich or something like that. They knew we always went there, and him and Hoagie, as we called him, his name was Bill Herbst, they came down and met us. Bernie had a car in them days, so he offered to take us home. That's how we met.
Your memories of Ted Klazuski? He was playing when you were a bat boy, correct?
Right.
What was it like working with Clue when you were a bat boy?
Clue, he hit a home run. He grabbed me by one of my arms and pulled me up in the air and run to the on-deck circle, and then he opened his hand. My little kind of stumbled trying to catch him and balance. And he laughed like hell. He thought that was the greatest thing.
He was that strong.
Well, Bernie probably didn't weigh more than 100 pounds soaking wet in those days, too. He was small. That's how come they let him be bat boy for so many years. He was a bat boy till he was 21, weren't you?
22,
yeah. But he's still short, but he was real skinny, too, then.
That's still pretty amazing, though. If he's 100 pounds, somebody could pick him up and carry him around.
I was a bat boy then. When Ted was playing, he had a cutout sleeve. He was the first one. He had me get a picture of my leg to his forearm, and his forearm was bigger than my legs were, and they blowed it up. They made him look like a He-Man and me look like an olive oil or somebody. And he used to go on the road. We go to Chicago. They used to take me along. We get to Chicago, and Clue and I and Post and Bell, and we're sitting in the lobby. All at once, something went flying by. It was Clue's dog. He had
boxer.
Boxer. And that baby was in full speed. Clue picks him up, and I like picking up this chair. Eleanor, you never know when she go to Chicago. Well,
his family is from
his
Illinois.
She go up to visit them and go to the game.
Bernie, do you have a particular Ted Klazuski game that sticks out in your mind?
Yeah, I know this one time I was always in the on-deck circle. I think it was Clue hit the home run, and it looked like it was going in the chicken run out there in the wild up in the middle of the moon deck.
Oh, yeah, the moon deck.
And when it came in, everybody went up, like, feeling his muscle. He said, yeah, you know what this is? Oh, pull-lock hammer or something like he called it. How in the hell did he put that? Well, they kid him about being Polish.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, and here's Polish stopper right here, boy. Big Teddy.
What do you remember about him when he was a coach for the Big Red Machine? I think he was the hitting coach, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about that?
Some of the coaches I see and how they worked, and the Clue, other coaches that try to change everything on them, closer to the plate and choke up on your bat and all this, and Clue wasn't that way. He watched the guy, and he says, now which one of them swings felt comfortable on you, and he worked into that. Instead of changing everything on the guy. And so, they enjoyed the thought of him showing us how to do it.
So he didn't try to teach like hitting for power or hitting for average. He just worked on you with...
Just so you had... That you were relaxed and turned the bat with the head up. And he just thought that's how they got here for all these years. And why change them now?
Because he was working with the Big Red Machine. I guess he worked with people like Pete Rose and Johnny Bench and Joe Morgan, folks like that. How was he at working with these star players?
That's the way he started with them, is do it this way. If you don't like it, forget it. Don't let us force anything on you.
He wasn't enamored by their big egos, if they had egos. He didn't let that get in his way.
Bernie, do you remember, like, Ted Kluszewski, what kind of bat did he use, what weight?
Yeah, he had a 38-ounce, no knob on the end, just mostly one-handed jabs he hit out.
Now, 38 ounces is pretty heavy for a bat, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody uses them that heavy anymore.
Yeah, they're like 32, aren't they, I think, is
34.
Kind of...
34.
Yeah.
Yeah, Clue, he had the heaviest bat.
Have you ever had a close call with a foul ball?
Yeah, went right to my arm. I'm there.
So you were sitting?
No, on one knee.
Went back in those days, the bat boy kneeled in the on-deck circle. And then I guess the next player came out and kneeled by you. Now the bat boys don't do that. They keep them in the dugout, pretty much. They just run out and get the bat.
I remember Willie Mays saying the Clue, "How can you hit that? It's like an ironing board." He said, "That bow comes swishing by me there." He said, "I thought I was going to take my glove off."
He was talking about one of Clue's hits.
Yeah. He said, "Teddy, what do you eat?" He's giving him the business.
Strong guy.
Yeah, all the visiting stars, when they come in, they stand around the batting cage and they all look for Clue. "Where's Clue today? He ain't out yet." Because they love to see. "Come here, look at this here. That's a donning board."
Yeah, the heavy bat.
Priscilla, did you socialize with Eleanor?
I do more now than I did back then. She socialized more with the other players' wives, and I did a little bit when she was a coach's wife. We went on functions where all the coaches' wives and the players' wives, we did some of that. But now I socialize with her. We go to lunch. We meet up with Donzetta Nuxall and Joyce Bell and myself, and we just reminisce about the olden days and the difference between the olden days and now.
Bernie, what year did you start working for the Reds?
1947. I was visiting team bat boy for just 3 years, and then I went to the home team, and I was there ever since.
So when you're a bat boy, your job's got to be more than just gathering bats.
Looks like a real nice job at the one that rains for 2 and 3 hours at a time, and the spikes get inches of mud on their spikes. Take you 15 to 30 minutes to get the mud off of them.
What was the best part? Was it exciting to be able to see your favorite players up close?
Oh, yeah. The kid, like a friend of mine, said, "Can you get this autographed?" I said, "Nope." Because my boss, Chesty Evans, says, "You're here to work, you ain't here to get autographed." Which was right.
As I tell people now, they ask me how he's doing, if he's really happy when he comes. I says, "Bernie doesn't get too high when they win or too low when they lose. He stays pretty even keeled." And I guess that's the way he is at work. You know how many players have came and went, and he's the same person to all of them as to the big stars.
How did you eventually become the clubhouse manager?
Mr. Chesty Evans was the equipment man, and he didn't want to travel. And they said, "Chesty, you either travel or we got to get somebody else." It was Dick Wagner, and he asked if I wanted the head job.
Well, you sent a resume in.
Right.
How many years were you the clubhouse manager?
From 68 till, let's see, my son took over. It was around 99 or 2000, I guess, somewhere in there. They made Rick the home team clubhouse manager and Mark the visiting clubhouse manager, and they made him senior clubhouse manager. Before, they all three worked together in the home clubhouse from the time the boys were in their teens, 16, they started, and it just evolved. It's hard to say, but he did start as clubhouse manager in 68. Before that, he was a clubhouse assistant or a bat boy or something like that. He always was around the clubhouse, but not in that capacity.
Can you kind of describe what it's like to be a clubhouse manager?
You got to get a spring training, and you got to get everything moved by truck and that, you know.
There's a lot of responsibilities because when he was clubhouse manager, by then they expected him to go on the road. Of course, when he was home, there was 12-hour days because he had to get there before the players and get things lined up. By the time he took over, they were starting to have meals, so you had to plan a meal. You had to make sure the clubhouse was clean, the uniforms were clean. There was a lot of responsibilities. In the winter, it was inventorying everything, packing things up, getting them ready for spring training. And then you start all over in January, getting the truck packed and leaving for spring training. So there wasn't a lot of downtime.
No.
Uniforms, equipment, the clubhouse, pretty much everything, right?
Yep. Ordering the kind of food they want, getting beans and wieners 3 days in a row back then.
Now
they get filet mignon, fish, and oysters, you name it.
Did you ever get any really weird requests for food that you can remember?
We kept it to the basics.
The Latin players always liked those oxtails. That was,
black beans and yellow rice.
Yeah, black beans and that.
We still have that for them.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, they brought their own oxtails in, but now they get them shipped in.
Who are some of your favorite players and your memories of them?
Rocky Bridges, Jim Maloney. I could go on and on.
Do you remember anything about Herm Wehmeyer?
That was a shame, the way the fans treated him here. He wouldn't get his head out of the dugout, and they'd be booing him. I was bad boy then. You just looked in on his face. Should I stay here or should I leave? Because he had a chance to be in the trade, and they had to have his permission. But Herman, he passed away at a young age. I still see his aunt lives up in the west side of town. Always go by there, and she says, "How about Hermie?" Really touched when she seemed like me going up and say something about him, you know. But the fans were really tough.
They knew of him from Western Hills and from the Legion teams that he played on, so they knew he was so spectacular then, but this was the big leagues, and that was different.
Why were they so tough on him?
Hometown boy, you think they'd be for him. He had some bad starts. ERA be up in the fives or sixes.
We didn't have such a strong team then in the years he was there. I think the whole league was eight teams then, and the Reds seemed to finish sixth every year for a long time. I guess since he was the hometown boy, they took it out on him. I don't know.
Jeff Wehmeyer is the son of Herm Wehmeyer, who played for the Cincinnati Reds in 1945 and also from 1947 to 54. He was born in Cincinnati and went to Western Hills High School. Jeff, tell us about your father's baseball career.
Like you said, he graduated from Western Hills High School, and he signed a contract to play with the Reds out of high school at the tender age of 18 and played a few years in the minor leagues, had a couple short stints with the Reds, and then came up for good in 1948, and like you said, played through the 1954 season.
And he played during that time with Ted Kluszewski.
He was great friends with Ted Kluszewski and Eleanor, Ted's widow, and my mother, who passed away a couple of years ago, remained fast friends until my mom died, actually. Sometime in the 90s, my mom and Eleanor got together a group of Cincinnati Reds baseball widows, and they would take a common vacation every year, to San Antonio or New Orleans, Mexico, Puerto Rico. Joyce Bell, Ted's widow, was part of that. Joe McMillan, Roy McMillan's widow. So 30 years after the fact, they got together for a week every year and relived the old times. It was a very special time for her, and it was special for us kids just that she got a chance to do that, reconnect with that part of her life.
I understand you had some home videos?
I have some home video of my mom and dad showing up at Ted and Eleanor's house and Ted taking my brother out of the car and trying to feed him to his boxer. Not really, but he was putting his head down and letting his boxer lick him in the face. Also have some video of my dad playing Winter League baseball in Puerto Rico, where the team was taking batting practice in bathing trunks. It was a different time.
Your dad was a pitcher.
He was a pitcher. He was a starting pitcher, which most pitchers were back in those days.
And he also went from the Reds to other organizations.
He played for 2 years with the Philadelphia Phillies and 2 years with the St. Louis Cardinals, where he played with Stan the Man Musial and all those greats of that era. He ended up his career with the Detroit Tigers. He had an elbow surgery that didn't allow him to come back and play any longer.
From 1959 to 61, your dad scouted for the Reds, and he recommended that they sign Pete Rose, who also went to Western Hills High School. Is that true?
That is true. He was told at the time that he was too small, too slow, and didn't have strong enough arm.
They said that about Pete Rose?
Yes.
Well, you and your family must be very proud of your dad.
Absolutely, we are. I mean, not just the fact that he was a Major League Baseball player, that he was a great father who, unfortunately, died at a very young age of 46 when I was 20 and a little too young to really appreciate what he had done and what he and my mom had sacrificed raising a large family. I have five siblings. Of course, back in those days, the ball players worked real jobs during the off season. It wasn't anything like it was today. My dad's overall record was under 500 and his ERA was between 4 and 5, which means today he would probably only be making $5 or $6 million a year. It was a little different back then.
Did you get to see him or Ted Kulusevski play?
I was born in 1953. My dad's last full season was 1958. But my mom certainly bundles us up and took us down to games. So I actually did see him. I don't remember that much about that. My memories are more retrospective.
I think I've seen you walking in the Finley Market Parade with Jim Tarbo. How'd that get started?
Probably over a beer at Arnold's or Grammer's at some point. Jim was honoring someone that he admired, Peanut Jim Shelton, who roasted and sold peanuts outside of Crosley Field for years and years and years, and actually at Riverfront Stadium, I think, before he passed away. And I happened to have a 1952 road uniform that my dad actually pitched in for the Reds, and we decided that it would be nice for me to honor him as well. So we've been doing that, gosh, I don't know how long, but 20 years anyway, I would say. Something we always look forward to, and it's a wonderful time to spend a day with my dad and drink a couple beers with him.
And then the opening day for 2013 is going to be April 1st. Are you going to be in the parade again?
I certainly hope to be.
Ted Kulusevski was the hitting coach for the Big Red Machine around in the 70s. Did you have any contact with him then, you or your family?
Well, my mom at that time was living in Texas. My dad accepted a job transfer to Dallas the year I graduated from high school in 1971. But she would come to visit once a year. And, of course, my mom would always get in touch with Eleanor and would get together with Eleanor and sometimes Ted. Ted owned with a partner a steakhouse in Cincinnati back in those days, Jack and Clue's Steakhouse, which started out on Central Parkway and then relocated to Walnut Street between 6th and 7th. So we would go down and have dinner and get together with Ted and his wife there.
What do you remember about Ted?
He was gruff. He was a big, burly, gruff exterior of a guy. But he was very sweet. He was very sweet to the people that he trusted and that he knew well. He was a teddy bear around my mom. He was always very helpful and a gentleman around myself.
Jeff Wehmeyer, son of former Reds pitcher Herm Wehmeyer, thanks for coming in tonight.
Thank you.
And for Around Cincinnati, I'm Lee Hay.
Baseball collectibles are a popular hobby for sports lovers throughout the country. Steve Wolter is the president of Sports Investments on Montgomery Road in Cincinnati. I recently visited with him in his museum and memorabilia store to talk about Ted Kulusevski's career and collectibles.
I grew up as a teenager in the 50s and was a tremendous baseball fan, mainly because of my collecting of baseball cards. That's where it all started. But I kind of fell in love with the Reds because the Reds had a tremendous team, and the team stayed together, unlike today, where they may have a player for a year and they're gone. But back then, you had a team and it remained a team. And the five players that were so well known back in the mid-50s for the Reds were Kulusevski, Post, Temple, Bell, and McMillan. the whole team was built around those five, and Klazuski was the most popular of any Red. In fact, he's probably one of the four or five most popular Reds players of all time, going all the way back. And, of course, the Big Red Machine had a big influence on that later on with Rose and Bench especially. But in the 50s, it was Klazuski. He was an interesting player because he was such a big guy and he had such big arms. And at first, the league didn't like it that he cut his sleeves because he was altering the uniform. And he appealed it, and they eventually let him continue. But what was neat about Clue was his home runs were awesome to watch because they were usually line drives. They were not long fly balls. They were hard line drives. And the other interesting thing, I remember when teams would get into fights, and I remember one specifically back in the 50s, Klazuski was not ever an instigator. He was the peacemaker. And he was able to accomplish that very easily because no one wanted to mess with him. It was his role to kind of pull people apart and pick them up and set them away from the melee going on. And he did that over his career three or four times. We call him in our hobby a cult figure in baseball, kind of like Rocky Colavito was in Cleveland. Not a Hall of Fame baseball player, but an all-star baseball player who was just loved by the fans. And he had some unique characteristics about him that made him interesting.
Willie Mays once compared Clue's hitting of line drives to an ironing board of all things.
Yeah, that's the way you describe it. Like an ironing board is straight and flat, right? And that's the way Klazuski's hit. He could decapitate some pitchers with some line drives back off his bat. I mean, he was well known for that as much as any player in the league at that point. He was a pull hitter, and so almost all his home runs were to right center or right field because he was a left-handed batter, and they would end up in the sun deck, as we called it. They would get out real fast. Yeah, but he was fun to watch.
Could you talk about some of the Ted Klazuski memorabilia you have here in the store?
There's only one interesting thing here in the store. Everything else is at home. But in the store, I bought maybe 15 years ago his complete uniform from 1954. It's a home Reds, so it's cream color with a red and blue trim. But it's the complete uniform. It's the jersey, the pants, the belt, the socks. And I had it all framed up in a big frame with a photo of him wearing an identical uniform. Clue's big years were 53, 4, 5, and 6. He made the All-Star game each one of those years, and his biggest season by far was 1954. In fact, many people felt he should have been MVP that year of the league, but he was narrowly edged out. Willie Mays got it that year. Actually, Klazuski was more valuable to his team than Mays was, but the Giants went to the World Series that year, so I think that had a big influence on their voting.
Tell us about this baseball.
This ball is actually dated March 8th, 1947. First home run, spring training. And this is the ball that Ted hit for his very first home run as an official Red in spring training. Then, of course, he went on the big league roster after that. And Eleanor, his wife, kept the ball, and she did the inscriptions on it. In fact, it's interesting. In that same spring training, Babe Ruth was there. Klazuski wanted his autograph on a baseball. Ted did. And Eleanor said, well, go over and ask him. And he said, well, I'm not going to do that. You go over and ask him. So he forced her to go over and get that baseball. Of course, Ruth was a very willing signer. He was a prolific signer. But he was in the last year of his life. He was sick. He had cancer. You know, it's interesting, but Ted, for such a big guy, his personality was very meek. And he was a teddy bear, in effect. I think people respected that. And so I just thought it was interesting when Eleanor told me that story about me. He said, no, you go get it. I don't want to go over. I don't know if she still has that ball or not. I can't remember.
Now, Clue's wife, Eleanor, gave the Baseball Hall of Fame one of Ted's baseball gloves so he'd be in the Hall of Fame somehow. According to reports, she had it bronzed and shipped it to Cooperstown.
Well, actually, there are a lot of things in the Hall of Fame that aren't from Hall of Fame players. Now, if the Hall of Fame is at the highest level, Klazuski is at that next level. All-star player, great player, just unfortunately never made the Hall of Fame. In fact, all those names I mentioned, Klazuski, McMillan, Temple, Post, Bell, they're kind of all in that category, although Klazuski was the best known of those five.
Do you get a lot of baseball fans asking for Ted Klazuski collectibles at your shop?
Yeah, actually we do. And the thing that people want the most is a Ted Klazuski single signed baseball. They're hard to find. He did not sign a lot of baseballs, single sign. He signed a lot of team balls. But his baseball today on an official ball, nice condition, everything being right about it, is $700 to $1,000. But we still sell on a fairly consistent basis his signed 8x10 photos. Those are much more available, not nearly as expensive as the baseballs. This photo, it's a little snapshot photo, like 2x4 maybe, black and white, obviously. It's a photo of Ted swinging a bat in his Indiana University baseball uniform. So this is as early a known photo of him in a baseball uniform that I've ever seen. It's actually dated on the back, Indiana University campus, 1944. But the irony of this is that he was much better known as a football player in college and in the Big Ten. He was an end, I think, than he was baseball. And somehow that got switched toward the end of his senior year where the emphasis, or right when he graduated, I think he felt he probably had a better long-term future in baseball than in football. And so it didn't take him very long to get to the big leagues. I mean, I think his first year was 47, maybe 48, but his minor league career was brief. And actually for his size, obviously a great hitter, power hitter, and average too. For his size, he was a very good defensive first baseman. Every year had led the league in fielding percentage. So he was kind of a complete all-around player.
Do you have any photos of Clue as a coach with the Reds?
Actually, a lot of our photos that we have for sale here are him as a coach, signed 8x10 photos. Ted was a hitting coach for a long time for the Reds, very well respected as a hitting coach. He had not only the technical skills, but his personality was such a demeanor that players liked him and would let him coach them. Ted was not the kind to be forceful and say, hey, your swing is totally wrong. You got to change to this. I don't think that was his personality. My guess is that he would work with what the player had and enhance it as opposed to trying to change him totally. And I think that would match the kind of person that he was. Today, they make so much money that they don't feel like they have to pay attention to managers, coaches. And back when Ted was coaching, which really was, what, maybe early 70s, through the mid-80s, players just had started to make big money, but they still, I think, had a lot of respect for him, and I'm sure he developed a lot of the good hitters on those teams.
Eleanor Klazuski is the wife of legendary Cincinnati Reds player and hitting coach Ted Klazuski. Clue played for the Reds in the 40s and 50s. He returned to the Reds and became their hitting coach in the 70s, working with the players of the Big Red Machine. Eleanor still lives in Cincinnati and remains a Reds fan. We were honored to have her come into the studio this summer to share memories of her husband, Ted Klazuski.
Eleanor, your history with Ted begins in the 1930s in Argo, Illinois, which is a few miles from the old Comiskey Park when you were both kids.
We were in grade school together and high school together. We started dating in our junior year. We were married in 1946, and his parents died in 44 and mine died in 47, so they didn't really get to see his career at all. But we maintained he had brothers and sisters in my side of the family, so they really enjoyed his career, lived a good life with watching him become a good ball player.
You were also an athlete, and your husband credited you with helping his major league career?
I just bought him a 16-millimeter camera, the Christmas 47, and just took it, obviously, down to spring training and sat in the stands and just took pictures, as you do when it was something new. And then we just spotted the fact that when he was having a bad day or a couple of bad days, we just ran the film, and that's how it started. I could see little things that he was doing wrong, so it worked out to his advantage. I still have the film.
I don't know what condition it's in, but I still have it.
Now, when did you get married to Ted, and when did you two move to Cincinnati?
February of 1946. And then he went down to spring training. We decided to make Cincinnati our home in 1948. So off and on, we've been here since 1946. But then 46 and 47, we went home back to Argo, Illinois. We had about three families in one house, and that didn't work out too much. So we just decided that we liked Cincinnati and hoped that it would work out for us. So we decided to make Cincinnati our home.
Now, professional baseball was different back in the 50s, for sure.
Oh, by far.
Did you socialize with the other baseball players and their families?
Oh, yeah. We had picnics and get-togethers, and the wives got together when the fellas were on the road. The usual baby showers and shopping. And we built our own swimming pool, and we got a lot of help from some of the ball players. They pitched in and helped us dig out some dirt and shape out the pool. Well, we did have our trainer back in the 40s. Not the trainers that they have now, the really professionals, and that's good, too. But he was the trainer then, Doc Anderson. And he came out to help Ted one day shape up some trees, and he was sitting on the limb and cut off the limb that he was sitting on and fell in our creek. And then, well, actually, the same gentleman, Doc Anderson, when we put an addition to our house, we had an outdoor and indoor fireplace for cooking, and he said, well, I'm going home now, and he opened the door and stepped in the hole where they hadn't finished putting in the foundation for the fireplace. So he was a character. And the ladies, we had a bowling team, so I was a bowler. Yes, we had a lot of fun. I used to go down at the airport or train station. That's what they did, travel by train when Ted was playing. And 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm sure the wives don't do that now. They probably have somebody pick them up, or they have the cars parked there or whatever. It's different.
What was the neighborhood that you lived in?
We bought our house. It's down below Kennedy Heights and Pleasant Ridge in that area. Actually, we were in the county. We were not actually in the city. We were in the county, but right up off of the Red Bank area in there.
Who were some of your friends among those players and their wives?
Well, actually, I still have a close relationship. I talk to her at least 2 or 3 times a month, Mrs. McMillan, Roy McMillan's wife, Joyce Bell. I don't see Donzetta that much because she lives out in Fairfield. We don't get together that often. So those three, yeah, and Mrs. Wehmeyer, but she's since died. But we took trips together, got together, giggled like high school girls, college kids, sat on the bed and giggled. It was fun.
Did you go to all his games at Crosley Field?
I kept score, minor league, and the doubleheaders that they don't play now at Crosley Field.
Where did you usually sit?
Behind home plate.
Did you attend many of the games when he was coaching with the Big Red Machine at Riverfront?
No, not that many. But I would have to take him down and come back and go down again, so I saw a fair share. But when it got to be really exciting, I really went. When it got close to where we knew we were going to probably be in the World Series.
Any memorable games that you saw?
All the games that I saw when he was playing, to me, were memorable because he had a nice career. The Big Red Machine, of course, that was exciting. And the winning in the World Series back-to-back, that was very exciting, too. But nothing really stands out in my mind, really, as far as any one particular game. Except the World Series that he played in, that he finally got to play with the White Sox in 1959. That was really exciting. I didn't miss any of those games. I saw all those.
Well, I understand he had a really good series for him.
Yes, he had a good series. For a couple of days, they even named a street after him in Chicago. I don't think it's there now, but during the series, they did.
Tell us about that. He had an oversized commemorative bat that he posed with for opening day 1955. Do you still have that bat?
Yes, it's downstairs in his kind of trophy room that he built downstairs. It was a humongous bed, but, I can't put dimensions on it, but it was at least triple, maybe more than what a normal bat would be, and it was on a big plaque. It was very nice. It was given to him by the ballplayers of yesterday. That organization isn't around anymore. I did sell little bits of stuff. Because what was I going to do with all of it? So I did start selling some of it, but the major stuff I've kept, the bats and the home run balls and things like that. We played in Columbia, South Carolina, his first year in the minors, and then 47 in Memphis. And that was interesting because they ran an article in the paper that he couldn't catch a bear in a telephone booth. Kind of crude. I was not a happy camper. I learned in a hurry, though, you don't talk back. You keep your mouth shut. Fortunately, he had a nice career and didn't get booed, so that was the nice part of it. But it's kind of hard when they're saying something nasty about your husband and you're sitting there. But I did learn. I didn't want to be called a bag of worms too many times.
Now, he cut the sleeves from his jerseys because he had such big arms. What about his everyday clothes? How did you deal with that? Did he have to have custom-made suits or clothing made?
He could pretty well wear shirts, but the pants and the jackets had to be tailor-made. But you know that back in the 50s, they wore those heavy flannel uniforms, and he couldn't move his arms, especially when they got wet. So he just one day just cut them off, and they told him, you can't do that. But he did, so that's how they started with the sleeveless stuff. Of course, now they have the knits, which is neat, which is far more comfortable. I don't know how they managed to play back then with those heavy, wet flannel uniforms on, but they did. So it's just a different era that they're in now, and for the better. They have batting gloves, sliding gloves, helmets, and the helmets are a good thing for sure. I just still can't get used to that strike zone that they have nowadays, though. It's so different than when Ted was playing. Sometimes I think they're calling a strike when it's by their toes, for heaven's sakes. It looks like that to me. But that's the new way they play.
Do you think Ted would have a strong opinion about the way the game is played today and about the players of today?
No, he was not one to speak out about things. He just went along with it. I guess if you pinned him down, he would answer you. But I think the players keep themselves in better condition than back when they did in the 50s. I mean, they work out now, and they stay in shape during the winter. Overall, most of them do, and I think that's a definite advantage, where I think the players in Ted's era, they didn't do that. You have to understand they weren't making the kind of money that these players are making. Ted's first contract was a major league contract. It was $6,000 a year. And then he was playing minor league ball, but he was signed to a major league contract, and that's what major league base salary was then, $6,000 a year.
You were speaking about conditioning. As I understand it, Ted never really lifted weights, so he had a great physique. How did he keep himself so fit?
He came from a big family. For a while, he worked in a factory at home lifting bags, but I don't think that really had that much influence on it. He was just big. His younger brother was even an inch taller than Ted, and they were husky people, not obese or fat. His mother was probably 5'8". 9'10", big person. I didn't get to meet his father. His father was ill at the time, so I didn't get to meet him. But I think that's what it involved from, just from the stature of the rest of the family.
What about his diet? What kinds of things did he eat at
Anything home? That was in front of him. He was a big eater. I mean, that guy, when we got out, he would try everything. And I'm thinking, how did you even know to eat this stuff? Because he came from a very poor family, and sometimes a sandwich was a mayonnaise sandwich. That was his dinner. And then all of a sudden, he's eating snails and steaks, and I was trying Mexican food, Chinese food, and I think, where'd that come from? I didn't know that. So it was interesting how it evolved into a nice, comfortable life.
Ted was popular, I think, with the female fans. How did he handle the adoration from them?
Contrary to what every part of the world thinks, he really was very shy around women. But, yeah, he liked it like anybody else would. It was teenagers, but you have that with everybody. I mean, the gals now, I'm sure the ball players still have their following, more so probably than back in the 50s. I mean, he'd talk to them and sign autographs, but he wasn't very comfortable about having all the ladies around him.
Did you attend any of the fan picnics in the parks that were held around Cincinnati during the 1950s?
We used to go up to La Swordsville on, like, the All-Star break. Well, of course, Ted played in some All-Star games, but, yeah, we would have family picnics. We'd cook and have a big blast out there.
What did you and Ted do during the off-season?
Really, not very much. It didn't seem like you had a lot of time. I mean, you know, from October and then turned around, and in February we were heading for spring training, so Ted liked to do arts and crafts, building things, building ships. He was big with guns. He had quite a gun collection, and he would go out and practice shooting on the range. He always had a project going. Was a big, knew-how-to-fix-everything person. So I just kept busy doing things like that. Built the rec room downstairs. He finished that off all by himself down in our basement.
I understand bowling was something you guys liked to do. Crossword puzzles was something else that you...
Well, I was the bowler, and then we had a husband and wife team. He wasn't that much of a bowler. I mean, he bowled, but it wasn't one that he liked that much. And puzzles, I finally got him started on crossword puzzles and finally got him started on bridge, too. And then I know how silly that's going to sound. The ball players and their wives are going to... But we used to play charades when we had get-togethers, the guys against the girls, and the wives always beat the guys. Because we were the ones that went to the movies, pretty much. We would always pick movies, and we always beat them at charades. So we had fun.
Now, I heard a story that one of his gloves is in Cooperstown, and that's because of something that you did.
I snuck it out of his trunk and had it bronzed. And then Danny Littweiler knew a lot of the personnel up at Hall of Fame, and he was going up there for some reason. I've forgotten what it was. And so he took it up. I have no idea when they display it, but, you know, I donated it up there. I thought at least that part of him will be in the Hall of Fame, even if the rest of his records aren't, but at least the glove will be. So it turned out really nice.
So Ted's not in the Hall of Fame, but the glove is.
Yeah, well, the one thing that bothers me is I know he was a good hitter, but nobody remembers or recognizes that he set a major league record for fielding first baseman. And then I'd like to meet that gentleman down in Memphis that said he couldn't catch a bear in a telephone booth and tell him that he'd set a major league record, not a National League, but a major league record for fielding first baseman. They never talk about that. It's one record he's very proud of. He worked hard to become a good first baseman because he was naturally an outfielder, and then they converted him to playing first base.
The back injury he suffered in 1956 that had a really great impact on his career, did he get a lot of support from doctors and from his teammates about his injury?
I know the club was behind him. They sent him up to the Leahy Clinic in Massachusetts to get a final opinion on what should be done. And the doctors up there told him that a surgery would help, but they couldn't guarantee that he would ever have the mobility. You need your mobility when you're a hitter or a baseball player. So he chose not to. So he just played with a bad back. There are good days and bad days. Some days I had to tie his shoelaces. He couldn't bend over to tie his shoelaces.
How did he get that back injury?
We don't know. Just I think he might have been born with a bad back, and it just showed up. But he played a lot of sports. He was big in sports in high school, played basketball, football. So it could have been an injury from then that when you're young, you just pass it over and you don't think too much of it.
Were there any other injuries that Ted suffered during his career?
No. And that was the killer, though, and that restricts your swings. You can't hardly play when you have a bad back. I don't know that he could have played too much longer than he did, because he was a big man. A smaller stature player could probably play longer. Pitchers play longer because they don't play every day. But I think his size probably worked against him.
There are pictures on the internet of Ted with various Hollywood movie stars, and what was that side of his life like?
Oh, that was fun. If we were out in Hollywood, we got to go on the set with Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. That was fun. Then he was on a television show. There are two television shows. One was Masquerade, and the other one was What's My Line? He was on that. He rubbed elbows with presidents. Who would have thought back in 1946 when we were married we'd ever rub elbows with presidents or a president? So, yes. Ted Williams, we got to know. Not Ted Williams, but Musial and Dodgers. We had them as guests in our house.
He was part owner of a restaurant, Jack and Clues, I think was the name of it.
Right.
Tell us about that restaurant.
They used his name, and of course he went down in the evening and just wander around and talk to people, signed autographs, basically is what he did. And then on Saturdays, he got a big kick out of going down and helping cut steaks. That was something he really enjoyed, so... But otherwise, it was just more of a being a greeter. And since his name was attached to the restaurant, he had to be there and circulate around. So he enjoyed it. It gave him something to do in the wintertime, basically.
Jack was the name of the other person?
Jack Stayin. He was the original owner, started the steakhouse, and then asked Ted if he wanted to join him. So Ted said, yeah, sure, why not?
And how long was it in existence?
I think we finally got out, actually, when we moved into the condo in 76, probably. We must have started in the 60s, probably, late 60s. But he wasn't around that much because once he got back into baseball, you know, he was pretty much tied up with baseball. So he did make some appearances. But I think our final year got out from under when we moved into our condo.
Tell us about the day his jersey number was retired. I believe that was 1998.
Mrs. Schott was so good about that. She gave us seats in her private box. And then I think we had a total of well over 20, pushing 30 people that came in. So it was fun. It was a fun weekend. It was very nice. And the statue was, that so took me by surprise. When I saw that in the paper, I thought I had read it incorrectly. But yeah, those two stand out.
And have you been to the Reds Hall of Fame?
Oh, sure. Many times.
What are some of your favorite items there about your husband?
Well, I saved a uniform that I donated to when Mrs. Schott, when they were starting to work on the museum, I told her, I said, I had, when it's finished, I kept a uniform. So it's there someplace. I haven't been up recently, but I like that big wall. And then, of course, they have that big cinematography or whatever wall with the players all that are all in the Hall of Fame. I think that's a neat idea. And then, of course, they have the replica of the plaques that they get when they're in the Hall of Fame. So I think we have a marvelous museum. I think they've done an excellent job with it. And I like that reproduction of the games when you go in and see that little movie clip. I think that's a neat idea, too. And, of course, Pete Rose with all his roses. Rose Garden, I guess they call it. Yeah, it's neat. They did a really good job with it.
What's your favorite memory of Ted?
Very likable. Took a lot to get him angry. He had a very calm personality, so he was easy to live with. I think I remember that more than anything else. And that he really made something of himself. And I know that sounds like a knock on his brothers didn't. When he had the opportunity, he took it and ran with it and made something of himself. So I'm very proud of that. Very rarely got upset about anything, even as he got older.
What do you think his legacy is?
That he was a gentle giant, frankly. I think that's the best legacy you can give somebody. I don't want to use the word nonviolent, but just an easygoing person to get along with. I don't think he had any trouble with his teammates. A personality onto yourself, and you have made a name for yourself, it's hard to not have that come through when you're sitting on the bench. But he got along with everybody as far as my knowledge was concerned. So I think that's a good legacy to have, except maybe Hornsby, the manager. I can remember he slid into home plate one time and he had blood coming out of his nose, and Hornsby came up to him and he said, "Do you think you can still play?" And he's laying there with blood coming out of his nose, and Ted said, "Well, I guess so." He was quite a character, Hornsby was, the manager. He never said hello to me the whole time he was a manager, just walked right by us, the wives. I guess we weren't supposed to be there. I don't know.
It sounds like your husband was an exceptional man.
Well, I'm prejudiced, but yes, I think he was. I don't know too many people that had anything bad to say about him, and I think that's a nice tribute to him.
Did you like to travel a lot together?
I liked to travel, but when Ted got out of baseball, he had had enough of traveling. I couldn't get him out of the house. I didn't make all the trips, you know, when he was playing, but I made some of the trips. We had to pay for me when I was on the road. I don't know what they do now, but I had to pay for my part of the room and parking and stuff like that, plane fare to get me there. They took money out of Ted's World Series check. When we flew to California, they took it out, the plane fare out of there. Now, when the Reds played in 75 and 76, the World Series, they were really nice. They paid for everything. That was really first class. But not the White Sox. They took the plane fare out of the World Series check. But traveling by train, that was not Ted's favorite. He didn't fit in the bunks, for one thing. I do remember up in Oakley, took him to the train station, and he and, I want to say it was Derringer and a couple of other ball players, and I saw him get on the train, and I started to pull away, and the train pulled down, and there was Ted and the ball player still standing. They had gotten on the wrong train. They were supposed to be heading east, and they got on a train that was going west, and the conductor found it out in time, so they were still standing there. And I went over and I said, "What's wrong?" And he said, "We got on the wrong train." So there's a lot of good stories, a lot of good memories.
Sounds like it was an interesting life you had with him.
Very. Still is. I still benefit from being his wife. I really do. Opens a lot of doors for me, and I appreciate that. Almost every day I benefit from being Mrs. Klazuski. Very proud of it. Wouldn't have had it any other way.
Do you get any fan mail still?
No, not anymore. An occasional letter that's just asking for money addressed to Ted, which I think is, with this magic computer, the age, don't they know that he's been dead 24 years, for heaven's sakes? It fell off, pretty much. I think it was probably, it took a year for it to get into the system, because they print all those baseball books out and they designate who's alive and who's dead. So I don't think the kids nowadays even know, other than when they see a statue down maybe at the ballpark. They seem to talk about the Big Red Machine and the Wire to Wire, which was an exciting... that was my first trip overseas in 1990. I was going nuts trying to go from kiosk to kiosk, trying to find out whether they were still Wire to Wire or they're still in first place. That was an exciting year. That's what they talk about now, and that's as it should be. But I think they could still talk about the 50s. We didn't win any pennants. I think pitching was our bugaboo. We had hitters. We had hitters that, without steroids, were hitting 40 home runs, 35 home runs. Tied a record, rather, for a team hitting 221 home runs. So we had a lot of players that were hitting... Gus Bell, Wally Post, all hitting 40 home runs and better. They don't talk about that. That's my complaint. I keep trying to push them to say something, but we had good games. We had good teams. When you're having that many fellas that are hitting home runs, 40 home runs, we should have been up there, and we weren't.
A lot of players have these little rituals they do. Was Ted like that?
Yes, if he was on a hitting streak, I was not allowed to wash his clothes. I couldn't even sneak it. He made sure that whatever he was wearing when it started, it's what he wore until he went hitless. There was an ongoing battle, and it was working for him, so who am I to say differently? Everybody had their little quirks back then. I think you see some of the players still do that.
In particular, on the team, who were some of his best friends that he played with?
Roy McMillan, Gus Bell, and I think he used to at one time room with Johnny Temple. We didn't seem to hit it off as we did with the, for some reason, with McMillan and Gus Bell. And as I say, I'm still very close with them. But no, not beyond that. We just all got along, but I think when he was on the road, probably he would be with McMillan or Gus Bell. And the trainer, for some reason, and Bernie Stowe. Bernie Stowe was just a bat boy when Ted started. And look, he's still going strong, or his children are, his boys are. As that's really nice. I'm glad they're a nice tradition for them. And Bernie he was a friend. So he came over to the house a lot of times, too. He was helping Ted.
Do you have any favorite restaurants that you ate at with Ted?
Houston Restaurant, the one that's on the way to Lebanon, over there on Reading Road or 42. We eat there pretty much. And then we went across the river because, you know, they didn't serve liquor here on Sunday when Ted was playing ball. So we went over to the Olsner's family restaurant almost every Sunday. And then they would sneak us drinks in the coffee mugs because they weren't supposed to serve liquor either, but they would serve us drinks. And then now we're all going to get arrested. I'll probably end up going to jail now because I said that. Those people weren't pretty much almost every Sunday. And then Mecklenburg's. Almost after every night game, we would go up and have the big hamburgers at Mecklenburg's. Those three places pretty much we stayed with. And then special occasions, we treated ourselves to the Maisonette. We did our 25th wedding anniversary up there in the Maisonette. We rented the room upstairs and had lots of friends in. Well, in Beverly Hills, I forgot about Beverly Hills. Actually, the week before that big fire, we were in that room where the fire started. There was a wedding reception from one of the ballplayers, Freddie Norman. And then the next week, I'm wondering if that fire was simmering in there when we were in that room. He ate out so much on the road, so that he kind of just wanted to eat at home. And so we kind of had a running battle all the time. I was always home. When he got home, I wanted to go out, and he didn't.
How many years were you married?
42. when he died. It was a good ride. Still is, as I say. I still have people remember Ted, which kind of surprises me, because he's been dead 24 years and played in the 50s. But it's nice when people still remember, pick up on his name. It makes my day for me.
Thank you, Eleanor.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I enjoyed it.
And that was Eleanor Kluzewski, the wife of Reds player Ted Kluzewski. In the next hour, you'll hear more stories about Ted Kluzewski, plus a visit to the Reds Hall of Fame and Prize Hills Historical Society, and a preview of Reds Fest in December. This is an Around Cincinnati Baseball special on 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati and 88.5 WMUB Oxford.